Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Gil Moore of Triumph. The Canadian rock legends recently announced their first tour in over 30 years, which also finds the band celebrating half a century since their formation. With drummer and vocalist Moore, guitarist and vocalist Rick Emmett, and keyboardist bassist Mike Levine on board, the group has also recruited guitarist Phil X, who briefly replaced Emmett in the 1990s, before the group entered an extended hiatus. Drummer, backing vocalist, and keyboardist Brent Fitz will augment the band alongside bassist and backing vocalist Todd Kearns. At present, the extent of Levine's involvement in all dates is not fully defined. The group begins their first batch of shows in April in Canada, with longtime friends April Wine serving as opening act. That group will also be on hand when Triumph takes to U.S. stages starting in mid-May. In this conversation, Moore discussed the unlikely Triumph reunion, his musical relationship with Emmett, and his strong beliefs on musical mentorship and musical education. That's Gil Moore of Triumph on Into Music, coming up now. Growing up, I was aware of Triumph's music. It was on the radio all the time, but I was one of those people that I was too young to go to the shows. And so this reunion tour is a chance for people like me, I think, who missed the band the first time around, to get out and see those songs live, hear them live, and experience a Triumph show.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty excited to see, like, a lot of people different ages. You know, we've got a lot of, fathers and mothers with sons and daughters, and, you know, folks that were in that gap, like, that weren't old enough to go to shows just when we stopped touring, and, like yourself. So that's great. We're going to have a real mixed audience this time around. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
I wonder if, you know, over the years since the gap in touring and recording, that you've seen a lot of that kind of thing where you hear from younger people who are like, oh, when are you going to reunite? We need to hear these songs. We need to see this.
I've been listening to that for decades. But, you know, everyone's got one life to live. I mean, I tell my kids this, you know, you need to make decisions based on how you want to live. And, we did so much touring. So when it, you know, sort of concluded, you know, for different reasons in the late 80s, we all had different agendas. Mike, Rick, and I had different things that were changing in our life. And in my case, I wanted to be able to look after my mother because she was elderly and my father had passed on. So it suited me to be off the road and not be a long ways from her because she needed my help. And God knows she gave me enough help when I was young. So that made the foray into Metalworks really good because it's in the same neighborhood here. And, you know, over the years, it's become a family business. We have, you know, a school here. We have a sound and lighting company. We have the recording studios, which is how it all started. But we've grown them, of course. I just love the scene here. So there was no real intention for me to ever, you know, rev up the rock and roll machine touring engine again. In terms of playing, I've been working on a technical, you know, sort of a futuristic platform with our lighting director, Paul Dexter, to launch a mixed reality tour at some point. But this just came together by happenstance. You know, the NHL and Rogers up here just took to our music during the, you know, Stanley Cup playoffs last year. All of a sudden, Triumph was everywhere. People were rediscovering the band. The NHL asked us to come out for the Stanley Cup finals and actually play, you know, at the Oilers and Panthers game. And we did it as a lark. We did it really just to, you know, give our families some fun and live some memories. But, you know, when we got together, Mike was unable to come. I should say that he was doing Eddie Trunk and he had another appointment in Toronto, but it was so last minute. Rick and I just said, let's go do it with Phil. And then Phil, of course, brought Brent and Todd to fill out what we were doing. And then when we got in the trailer, we're in the dressing room, we just hit it off like Jack the Bear. And Live Nation then watches what we did, and they went, "You guys have to tour," and they put the big machine behind it, and yeah, that's it. Crazy how it came together, but we're just gonna have some fun with it, and it's been great getting back on the kit and really rediscovering my instrument, and working with Rick in the studio now every couple of days, and it's been a really invigorating experience, and I really can't wait to get back out there and see the fans, and it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Well, one of the things that I love is, sometimes when there's a reunion, if there were, members who came into the picture later or something like that, sometimes they're excluded. And this is great because you're bringing in Phil, who was with the band after Rick left, and the new guys. And so it's one of those things where it's like, I think a lot of people, who maybe, came in during the Phil era or something, they get the satisfaction of seeing him be part of the band.
Having Rick Emmett and Phil X on lead guitar, I feel like we've got a double-barreled shotgun, at the front edge of the stage every single night, because those two guys are both incredible. And what we never knew is how they complement each other so much. And that was back to Edmonton when that happened, and those guys got jamming a bit together, and all of a sudden realized, wow, this is like the they I think they just experienced each other face on in such a great way. That went together. It's kind of like what happened with Brent and I. Like I just thought I nicknamed him the King, because he's so cool the way he's got so much insight. He's kind of a bit of a technocrat, I guess, like me. Likes to know how things work and get into the weeds on a lot of things. So we just and then of course Todd Kearns. I don't know what to say about Todd other than he's rock star personified. I mean, he just commands the stage, and it was just kind of magic. Like we went out, we played, and we went, "This is great. Let's do something with this." So why not? Live Nation is pushing us hard. Why don't we go on tour? Fans are pushing us hard. We've been getting the social media, like it comes in like a snowdrift every day of, "Can you do this? Can you do that? Can you, come back, do this, play here, play there." Here, so that's how it fell together. Kind of a laundry hamper story there, but
Does this open up the door to maybe for like a kind of a major reissue campaign of the catalog, like in the coming years?
well, that's up to our American labels and our management. We have a great manager looking after everything now, Jason Murray. He's just doing a great job, and he's got a lot of strategy as to what to do with recordings, and all the unreleased tracks we have, and all those sorts of things are being discussed. But exactly how it's going to roll out, I don't know. I just know there'll be going to be a lot of surprises. I think Santa still has a lot of presents in the bag.
There's another element of this tour that I think is meaningful for a lot of people because the music of, I think about Triumph, it's like the band Yes, the positivity of the name and then the positivity of the music. And I think this music right now is something that people need given the state of the world.
I couldn't agree with you more. I hate to see music not be a unifying force. Like all the arguments over the Super Bowl to me were, it's a sad state of affairs, because music's a universal language, and I don't care, what kind of music you have, where you are in the world. I want to be able to experience it. It may not be my first choice, but if it was up to me, there'd be only one band in the world, ZZ Top, and I'd be listening to it. Maybe Led Zeppelin, I'd let them in, but we can't be that narrow just because that's the band I want to listen to. And we gotta have, I find, if I look at my own taste, they're all over the map. I mean, I started kind of as a bluesman, which is why I kind of, relate to bands that have a blues edge, or music that has a blues edge. But do I like country? Yeah, I love country. Jazz, not as much as country, but I like jazz a lot. And I just go all over. There's no such thing as two things. There's no such thing as a bad golf course. There's no such thing as bad music, if it's performed well.
One of the things that you've done and is part of this tour is the charitable element using like $1 a ticket to fund music education. And I know music mentorship has been huge for you personally and Triumph in general. When did that sort of like become a thing for you that it's like, I want to talk to kids about what they're doing and encourage them and everything?
Well, you know, I started a school here at Metalworks 20 years ago and had to learn a lot about post-secondary education. And it's expensive. You know, it doesn't matter what university or college you're talking about. It's expensive. So you do have student aid to help students with to finance it. But it just became very apparent to me that there's a lot of kids that are just completely shut out, you know, that have no ability to learn. And in fact, you know, when I learned to play drums, I call it unlearning because I have to unlearn what I didn't learn back then because we didn't have it. So I started to think about, you know, using handheld device, you know, mobile connectivity over Wi-Fi and saying, let's share all this stuff and let's take it to all the kids, all the students, and especially the underserved, marginalized youth, you know, that are in child protective services or they're in pediatric care or they're, you know, they're compromised one way or the other. They're having a really hard time. Why not give them music, the ability to create it, the ability to learn it, the ability to share it for free? So that's what Sounds Unite Canada is all about. And we're really pushing that charity as hard as we can. So the money from the tour is going to help, obviously. And hopefully we're going to help a lot of kids along the way.
I love that, you know, knowing this about you, but over the weekend, I watched a film about the great jazz saxophonist and composer Wayne Shorter, and he had this concept of mentorship, which was described as, you know, when a parent takes a kid to a parade, the kid can't see, so you put the kid on your shoulders, and then the kid can see more than the parent can. And I think of mentorship as being that, putting somebody on your shoulders, and then they can move into the future.
That's a great way to express it. And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I just look at it like it takes time to go in. That rearview mirror has to build up and build up. And then one day you realize, you know what? What's your purpose here? And if it's not to be a teacher, and by that, I don't mean in the formal sense, you know, in a school, but if you're not trying to teach and mentor young people, what are you doing? Is it all about you? So I just look at it like being able to talk to young people is such a great opportunity, and any way to help them, you know, to get up on the bicycle and start pedaling is just sheer joy for an adult. I'm blessed to have three kids of my own. They're the joy every single day of my life. The three of them are just phenomenal. And, you know, now they've started families and so I have son-in-laws and so on. I have a granddaughter. You know, family is just the greatest thing. And that I think as a parent that it teaches you that it's not just your immediate family, but you have a role in the community. If you know something and you can share some wisdom, well, for God's sake, share it. Try to help someone that hasn't been able to avail themselves of the opportunity or the knowledge.
I think it's so smart what you all did with Metalworks. You know, there's this story of Frank Zappa, you know, having this world-class studio in his house. And somebody said, how did you do this? And he said, I don't do cocaine.
That's a good answer.
But to have the foresight to build the studio and then build the business off of that, which gave you longevity, which, you know, I think sometimes musicians learned later, like at some point you have to diversify because the road may not be there forever. Records may not be there forever. So you've got this other thing.
Yeah, I love the studio. I still do. That's where I'm sitting right now. I'm at Metalworks Studios. And like I said, I have family members that are, you know, involved in running the operation here. And we have a phenomenal group of, you know, the staff. To me, they're not staff. I don't even like that word. They're, you know, we have a music club here that we're all members of. You know, there's work involved, don't get me wrong, but it's a really nice experience being here. And it's a great asset. You're right, for the band. Like Rick and I are rehearsing in the studios. We have an engineer. He can record everything and show us our mistakes or whatever. You know, it's a really nice environment. I think all musicians like studios. I think that's where they relax. I think that it's the least stressful spot in the whole Ferris wheel that, you know, musicians find themselves on. A recording studio is like heaven.
Just to talk about, you know, you mentioned you and Rick rehearsing, and I know you did the In the Banger documentary, there's, you had played together in recent years, but there was a lot of time where you didn't. So now that you're back in that kind of probably semi-regular groove, what have you learned about the ways in which you've both grown and so forth as musicians?
Well, I guess, my perspective on drums, like I'm relearning the instrument. So I look at it now from a completely different perspective because of what's evolved over the decades. I just look at, humans were all drummers. Like it starts with, mama's bass drum right here in the womb, right? So that primal instinct of, the sound and the cadence and the rhythm, which is all through nature and everywhere else. Drum's the greatest instrument, it's a It's better than any treadmill for cardio, for starters. And as far as getting, your noggin to fire up when you've got all your hands and legs going, like it's a blast. I'm rediscovering it, and playing with Rick, my God, I mean, he's fantastic guitar player, always has been, but he's got the wisdom now that, when he was a kid, when we were kids, he was great at his instrument, but now he has the wisdom to go along with the chops. And it's fantastic. Like I think we're rediscovering each other in terms of our conceptualization of music and appreciation for different aspects of, music.
Do you have days like you kind of look around the house and you're like, man, I remember there was that time in '84 we were on the road and I was really frustrated, but that gave me this house, or that gave me this. Those times where maybe you weren't feeling like it, but at the end of the day, it's this thing that we created that's given me so much in life.
Yeah, we were really lucky. I mean, 99.99% of bands then and now, they all fail for different reasons. And Rick's bands, Mike's bands, my bands, they were all failures until we came together, and then suddenly everything changed. And see, you have to be grateful that you were lucky enough, first of all, to sort of connect with a good combination. It's like getting the right chefs together in the kitchen, and then you have to be lucky when you gain an audience, because that's what most artists struggle to do. And if you can grow the audience, which we were lucky enough to do, you have to be grateful to them. And at the end of the day, you're right. I mean, you look back and, whether it's, the studios here, or, my house, or, how my family is evolved, it all one way or the other goes back to these choices, that were made. And there was probably a different path in life that I might have had other than being a musician. Same thing for Mike and Rick, but the music path is a really great one if you can make it work. Not everyone can, but there are many paths in music that lead to success. Some, as many people as in radio and broadcasting, that are musicians at heart, right? And that's how they ended up sort of expressing their love for music, is by, well, I want to work, I want to surround myself in that environment, Or say our engineers here at Metalworks, who are oftentimes musicians as well, but they're prefer to be behind the board and, doing the shaping and the sculpting and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Very enthused about the music life, I'll say that. And I'm very enthused about what music does in our community. And, back to what we were talking about earlier in mentoring kids, I think if people need music in their lives, it can be a passion and a hobby. Don't have to be professional. You can get so much out of it just being an amateur musician, or even just a fan and just participating that way, but making music part of your life.
When I talk to lifelong musicians, I think about somebody like Robin Trower, who's like 80 years old, and he's making this music that's so vital, and he's still changing his phrasing, and it just shows to me that music is one of those things that allows us longevity and a constant contact with youth. And that sounds how you feel.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've through my work with Sounds Unite, I've been involved with dementia hospitals and so on. So learning from their neuroscience department, how, in particular, drums, but all instruments, but the drums is really that ticks all the boxes when it comes to the neural pathways getting fired up. So I think it's a very good thing. And Robin Trower, who I love, is a perfect example, like, because he's still using that part of his brain, and which connects to his, his hands, his voice, everything. It's all, as a network. He's exercising it. So if you think about it, people have asked me, what do you look at drums? One of the jokes I say is push-ups for your brain, I really believe that. And then if you sing on top of Brian, you get everything going all at once. Just got to try not run into yourself and step on your own toe or whatever.
A singing drummer, one of a rarefied class, but it's got to be a good one to feel, be part of that. You're kind of one of those, I imagine, an inspiration for guys who took it up after you.
Yeah, I mean, singing and playing is a kind of a weird combo for a drummer. I'll admit that, but I don't know. I did it out of necessity. That was we were a trio, and we didn't want Rick to have to sing every song and play all the lead guitar solos, and kind of make it halfway through the set and be worn out. It's like, oh, we got to share the responsibilities. But yeah, I turns out initially I didn't like singing. It was just a chore, and then eventually I learned to like it as I was educated a bit in how the larynx works and how to sing. And I had an opera singer as a coach, which was great. That was the first time I had any sort of knowledge of singing. But it was during the latter part of our recording career, so it was only the last few records that I was able to take advantage of that.
You've been listening to a conversation with Gil Moore of Triumph. The band is currently preparing for a North American tour, which begins in Canada in April and extends into the U.S. starting in May. You can see all the latest concert dates at the band's official website, triumphmusic.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. And before we leave, we always like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson.